Welcome to the Council of Better Business Bureaus podcast, The Bistro, where we will discuss today's hottest consumer trends, predict the future with consumer experts, and learn how elite businesses and entrepreneurs continue to push the envelope in today's marketplace.
Hello and welcome to The Bistro. Thank you for listening. For the Better Business Bureau, I'm your host, Elaine Espinola. April is National Financial Literacy Month, a month dedicated to highlighting the importance of establishing and maintaining healthy financial habits. This initiative began in 2000 when it was introduced as Youth Financial Literacy Day by the National Endowment for Financial Education. What began as a day has since evolved into a month-long awareness campaign supported by financial institutions all over the country. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with a spokesperson, Paul Golden, with the National Endowment for Financial Education. He'll walk us through the history of this educational initiative, the collaboration with national partners, and provide some great tips for individuals and families for all financial stages. Paul, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. I know you come from headquarters all the way in Denver. You're in D.C. for other events, and we're so glad this worked out.
Well, we're here frequently, so happy to be here in studio with you.
Excellent. Well, first of all, tell us about your organization and why it's so dedicated to serve the public good. Also, tell us about the collaboration with Jumpstart and how that started.
Sure. Where do I start? We've been doing this for the better part of 40 years. I've been fortunate to be with the organization for 13. And simply put, what we do is we provide financial education programs, resources, curriculum to help people through all walks of life, all stages of life. And so it's like giving them tools, knowledge, and also the encouragement to make good financial decisions. What we do is we start with a youth-oriented approach. So we have a high school curriculum that's been in place, you know, since the mid-80s. And we continue that on through college and then hitting people just in time as they're making financial decisions throughout their economic life, all the way up through the retirement. So the scope carries on throughout an entire lifetime of financial decision making. You know, it's the best thing about what we do is we're non-commercial and we don't charge for anything that we do because we believe access is an important barrier that people have. So we don't want to charge for anything that we do, and we want people to be able to have the availability of trusted programs. And so that's an important thing. You mentioned the Jumpstart Coalition. We were one of the founding members of that group. And that's a really great example of how organizations are coming together to collaborate on this initiative. Jumpstart is youth focused. Mm-hmm. So it's got K through 16.
Sure.
Background behind it. But what it is it's a coalition of organizations made up of for-profit, nonprofit, government entities who are all wholly focused on helping youth be better prepared to make financial decisions. So we're proud to be part of that organization as well.
Yeah, that's excellent. And of course, it all kind of starts as a young person and a young teenager, an adult learning financial literacy. It's probably not best to try and figure it out when you're 25.
Well, I mean, that you're right. It has to. We don't want kids to learn by the school of hard knocks. And so what we try to do with our high school program is give them foundational knowledge. You know, the important thing that we need to say is that you can't just sit a high school student down in one offering and say, here's everything you need to know. It has to be ongoing. It has to be continuous with youth. We're seeing struggles nationally with making sure that kids have access to this type of education in schools. And so we need to up our game there. We don't really have a national strategy in place. And it really becomes focused on what each state is doing. And maybe there's not even a defined strategy in each state.
Right.
So it really comes down to like teachers.
Right.
You know, and recognizing the importance of giving their kids access to this education and stepping up and doing it. But then they got to find materials that they can trust. And they also have to be comfortable with the materials as well.
Right.
So with the education.
Absolutely. And it may not be part of their curriculum as they have a whole other set of state standards to go by in the school system. And you talk about finding that really great material and going to your organization is a great place to find that non-biased material.
Well, we hope so. And that's what we want to do is we want to give them the tools, you know, but There's really no model for this. It could be math teachers, social studies teachers, after school programs, business teachers. It really kind of runs the gamut on who teaches it. One of the things that we do is we're a big research shop. In addition to providing the programs that we do, we also conduct a lot of academic research to really investigate the challenges and barriers to getting education out there. And we did a youth study of K through 12 teachers, and we asked them, are you teaching personal finance? And if not, why? And the number one, only 20% felt comfortable teaching personal finance because they of their own understanding of the subject matter.
Interesting.
You know, so it's like, well, we got to overcome that barrier. So not only do we have to give teachers a trusted, vetted curriculum, we also have to train them so that they feel comfortable in delivering that to their kids, but then also maybe they can manage their own finances a little bit better as well, too, because it's a big thing. You know,
sure.
It's like experience and confidence comes from, you know, being able to just do it yourself in your everyday life.
Absolutely. And so for anyone listening to this, a parent, for example, they're thinking, well, geez, my child actually might not get the best financial education in the school. As a parent, what can I or what should I be doing?
Yeah. And that's the sad thing is that we can't rely on the fact that our kids are going to get access to this. There's actually a couple recent studies out there. Champlain College out of Vermont is one of them that looked at state by state initiatives and kind of assigned a letter grade to what each state is doing. And there was a lot of states that were designated as failing. I think that's a little unfair. I don't think that tells the whole picture because, you know, even within those states that have an F grade, and I'm doing air quotes, is that there are teachers who are really stepping up and looking to deliver that education. With that said, as a parent, and I've got two young kids, I've got a preteen and a teen, we cannot just assume that they're going to get access to this. So we got to up our game. Other research we've done shows that parents have the most influence over their kids' decisions, and that comes more than having access to a class.
Sure.
Or having like a part-time job or some form of income that they can manage. So what we have to do as parents is we got to talk to them often, early. We don't want to lecture them, and we want to bring them into our household finances and show them how we interact with money. And that's the challenge, is we live in a cashless society.
That's a good point.
You know, and I think it was probably easier to teach kids tangibility of money when it was like, okay, and I think we should still do that when they're young, coins in a jar so you can see it amassing and building and, you know, it just shows that you're actually achieving goals. But when it comes to electronic tapping and swiping and going to the ATM and punching in numbers and money comes, you know, out, especially young kids, they just don't have that sense of how that whole process works. And
Paul,
so it's a
good point.
It's a little tougher. And so, you know, I mean, an allowance is a good tool, but just how you interact daily with money, just talk to your kids and don't lecture them.
Right.
Because,
right.
I mean, obviously everyone tunes out when they're getting lectured.
Sure. Great advice on all of it, especially not the lecturing. But it's interesting you say that. It's a good perspective and we don't always think about it in that way. I have kids who are a little bit younger than yours and I mean, my little one will say things like, put it on the credit card. She doesn't know what she's talking about.
Right.
But she just thinks, here's the card, you get it.
Yeah.
And she doesn't really have an understanding. And like you said, if there were dollar bills, she would see them go away
right.
when we hand it over. Interesting.
Think about even if you didn't talk to her or give her lessons, she's still watching you.
Right.
So if you're at a store with your young child, and I've done this before, and I've been guilty of this before, it's like, oh, Dad, I want this. Son, that's, you know, that's a want, not a need, blah, blah, blah. And then I buy something that is a want, not a need.
Good
I've
point.
Set an example, even though I didn't say anything. So we have to be mindful of that and that even if we're not talking to our kids, they're watching us.
Great point.
They're watching us pull out the credit cards. They're watching us hit the ATM and, you
Great
know.
Point.
So,
Great point.
So just be thoughtful. You know, I think the best thing that we can do is role model. Set a positive example, and that's good for us too, right?
Sure, absolutely. Well, listen, you talked about some of the partnerships you have, the nonprofit partnerships like the American Red Cross, Habitat for Humanity, and some others. Tell us how important these partnerships are on a national level to kind of get this message across and how they provide resources to people, you know, of course, all over the country.
It's something we're very proud of is the partnerships that we've had. We talked about Jumpstart and how we're one of the founding members of Jumpstart and just so happy to be part of that collaboration of organizations that is youth focused. People encounter financial challenges all throughout their life for a variety of circumstances. And so we've been proud to partner with, you know, social service providers and nonprofit organizations to reach their clients when they're in need with that financial education component. So you mentioned American Cancer Society, helping people manage money as they're managing this devastating illness. We also do work with MS Society and terrific organizations helping women transition to the workforce like Dress for Success. You mentioned Habitat
excellent.
For Humanity. We've done stuff for the NCAA. More than 120 partners, you know, to kind of reach that those audiences. So, I mean, that's a very important part for us because we can't do this on our own, and we have to understand where people have a need,
right?
To get built up again. And so, you know, I mean, we're doing stuff with the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And these are women transitioning from abusive relationships and starting off on their own, and that's very important work, and it's powerful, and it's great to see that we can be a part of them. You know, yeah. Helping to rebuild their lives.
Absolutely. You mentioned people of all financial stages, and you just listed a bunch of different scenarios where, of course, finances come into play when you have an illness or you're newly divorced or you're going through things. And it's really amazing that you're able to collaborate with these other organizations to really reach more people. That's fantastic. Where can people find a list of the organizations that you've partnered with?
So for the partners that we have, our website, NEFE.org, N-E-F-E.org is the best place to go. And that there'll be a lot of links directly to the great work that those organizations are doing. For consumers directly who are dealing with, you know, their own set of financial challenges, smartaboutmoney.org is a better website. We do a lot of self-directed courses, to kind of help people from everything from learning to budget, building an emergency savings. But we really focus on just-in-time education, and that's the important thing. We talked about the importance of youth.
Yes.
And we give them foundational knowledge, but we always like to say that's an inoculation. You need booster shots along the way, and we can't sit kids down at one time and say, here's everything you need to know. Go out in the world and you're going to be fine. Stuff happens.
Sure.
You know, illnesses come. We might lose a job, but we also kind of go through the normal transition of life where we start families, we buy homes, we change jobs, you know, and we need that education at that time when it's really of concern to us. And so that's the important thing that we focus on.
Sure. So you mentioned, again, the children. You talked a little bit about your high school financial planning program. Let's talk a little bit about sort of millennials and then on up quickly as we end here, the different stages, as you mentioned, the different types of, you know, financial ways that we can help kind of inspire and empower, you know, the millennials and then those families and then into retirement.
Right. Yeah. The young adults and millennial, that generation, they have their own unique set of challenges right now. The number one thing that comes to mind is the amount of debt that they have when they graduate in college. That's the obvious one. But what we're finding is that young adults really like, they're opportunistic. They want to be where the jobs are and they want to go to the destination cities for the opportunities. But those are very important very expensive places to be.
Sure.
You know, and so what we're seeing is that the traditional advice that we've always given is like, oh, you want to spend about 30 to 35% of your income on your house. That's not realistic. You know, young adults are 60, 70% of their disposable income going toward housing to be in these expensive areas. And so that's a big problem. And because of the amount of debt and the expenses that they have, we're seeing that they're delaying life goals. So they're not getting married. They're not starting families. They're not buying homes. And those are that's through research that we've done. And so those are the things that are concerning to us. We got to kind of back it up a little bit and think about how can we, you know, make sure that they're, you know, only taking out the amount of debt that's appropriate while they're in school and that they're able to manage it effectively. But that's kind of the unique challenges that the young adult generation has right now.
Excellent. And then for sort of those families that are transitioning into that retirement, what kind of challenges are they facing?
Well, it's tough. You know, I mean, you hear all the news that people aren't saving enough and those type of things. So that's kind of an ongoing challenge. We really have to back that up even further and just continue to talk about the importance of saving early and saving often retirees and near retirees can set an example for the younger generation about that importance of saving. You know, a lot of it is about how you are just going to manage your money and how you're going to take on issues like downsizing and retirement. Those are the focuses. But we're also very attentive to the dynamic of talking within the family about money. So, you know, aging parents and making sure that they have a plan in place and that you understand what that is so that you can support them and help them when they're older. You know, that's an important part of the equation for us as well, too. So we're just, you know, it's, I don't like to say cradle to grave. It sounds so grim, but we're really, you know, trying to hit people throughout their entire lifetime because money is something we interact with every day.
Every day through every stage. And I feel like we were able to cover a lot of them, someone's entire lifetime in a 15-minute conversation here.
Yes,
of course, we can find a lot more information on your website, and we really appreciate it. I guess as we're ending here, this is a broad question, but what would just be your best tip for anyone who's looking to lead a sort of financially better and more secure life?
Be encouraged and understand that you have the ability to do this. that no matter of your income level or your background or your socioeconomic status, you have the ability to manage your money. But you got to advocate for yourself. You understand your spending decisions, your spending behaviors, how you're saving, how you're using credit cards. That you're the only one who really, you know, understands how you're doing that, so you can be honest with yourself to address changes as they need to be made. But, you know, as you're going to look for bank products and stuff, really take the time to understand that so that you're making the best decisions as possible, and reach out and look for organizations that are trying to give non-commercial, credible information to help support you through that. And we feel like we're doing that, particularly toward underserved audiences. So, you know, we're just here to help and boost up that encouragement a little bit.
Excellent. Well, I can tell that you are. It sounds like you've got a wealth of information and a lot of resources. One more time, can you share your website for our listeners?
NEFE.org, N-E-F-E.org, and smartaboutmoney.org is a great site. Yeah, like I said, we don't sell anything that we do, and everything is just access.
Sure, sure. Paul, thank you so very much for joining us today on The Bistro. We really appreciate it.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, this has been super informative. And as we're doing our part in helping to raise awareness around financial literacy this April, it's been really a pleasure having you here with us. The Better Business Bureau is deeply committed to building and advancing a better marketplace, a trusted marketplace for all, because trust always matters. For The Better Business Bureau, I'm Elaine Espinola, host of The Bistro podcast. Until next time, it's been my pleasure discussing financial literacy and better business with you.
You just enjoyed the Bistro podcast. Be sure to tune in next month for a brand new episode. To learn more about our other shows, visit betterbusiness.blueberry.com. That's betterbusiness.blueberry.com, and subscribe. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the Better Business Bureau, Council of Better Business Bureaus, or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Blueberry's Terms of Service.